Shepherd also sounds a lot like Dogen. Mm-hmm. If you've read him, he's very similar. So we have been studying the five rings as they are manifested in the koans. We had some open questions yesterday that I found some answers. Anyway, we'll see what the question had to do with where did the Book of Serenity come from, and you know who authored what parts, right? So I wasn't sure who Tiantong was. It's Hongzhi, right? Who was just a little bit before Dogen in terms of lifespan. I think they shared some overlap. So in Chan history, what happens is when you're at a mountain that has a name, the person takes on the name of the mountain. So Dengshan, you know, there's Dengshan Mountain, and Tiantong Mountain, so Hongzhi is what's so confusing. Sometimes our ancestors have multiple names, and as if that isn't enough, then we have them in Japanese, which are different. So they have a lot. And then I think after they die, they get another name. They use
posthumous name.
Posthumous name. So it keeps us on our toes. So, but... So when we think about what we were looking at, a longer koan yesterday, we know that there's an introduction, a case, then a commentary in verse, that part we saw. And then there's also an additional commentary on the verse, and then a additional added sayings. So there's quite a few elements. Now, of all of those elements, one song is the author of the introduction, the commentary, the commentary on the verse, and the added sayings. Whereas Hongzhi, Tiantong Hongzhi, is the author of verses. So now, as far as the case, those are public cases. So those had been passed down from previous ancestors. And so they were written down and then lost or, you know, recovered, written down again. So, and it was really one song that was very active in ensuring that these cases and were recorded so that future generations would have them. And of course, you know, we have all of the verses and his commentaries too. Okay. One song. So just do we need a review on the ranks? Everyone's kind of got it? Yeah? Okay. Well, Thomas Cleary has another way that he presents the five ranks. So maybe I'll just share with you his understanding. So for the first rank, which is the phenomenal within the real, relative in the absolute, one practices detachment and interruptions of mental habits, gaining a measure of freedom and rest from compulsive behavior and confusion. And for the second, the real within the phenomenal, he says detachment alone is insufficient. And this is particularly, as you might hear this, not only from Thomas Cleary, but also from Hakuin, because he also believes you, and even Dengshan, you don't want to get stuck in any one rank. or any position. That's what ranks mean, position. So the notion is not to be in any fixed state. So you can see if you're caught in one of these states of detachment, for example, that, you know, that wouldn't serve you in the long term. And it actually, during the Chan period, it was not viewed very positively. So the requirement, or really what was important, was merging with your environment. That's, so if you think about the real coming into the phenomenal, that would be the reason you'd want to, you know, see how that's expressed. Particularly, you might experience it in nature or in some other activity that you're doing. Here we have merging with the environment, some unity of subject and object. So you can't be totally absorbed in this state either. Well, it's helpful for breaking mental scatterings, and that might be caused by excessive attention to the past or to the future. The important thing is not to remain in that state. The third is coming from within the real, and in that state, we think of more equanimity coming from probably the most familiar might be coming from the a meditative state where you've experienced the precious mirror, and when you come out, how the world looks different. And you haven't yet grasped or turned away from anything. So you have a sense of equanimity about what you're encountering. But of course that, you know, goes away too. It's impermanent. So having those experiences though helps you turn towards the teachings, because now you have some more in-depth experience with them. So while you have those experiences, you're also taking some positive action towards the Dharma, not only through observation but also through action. The fourth is going within the both phenomenal and the real. This one we talked a little bit about, using the word tension to describe those experiences of your moving. You have the experience of one and then you move into the other, and it's kind of moving back and forth. So there, you're not, you're aware of both, but you're not integrated yet in that experience. So that would mean then, of course, the fifth rank would be the integration of your concentration. So now you've transcended, and also you're in the world. So there's that inner penetration of the real and the partial. So there you have it. Five ranks. Well, yes.
You were saying how, you know, with let's say the first four, you wouldn't want to be stuck in it. You'd want to move back and forth. But what about the fifth one? Is that one you wouldn't mind being stuck in?
I think that you probably have some experience. It's would you mind being stuck in? I think it's hard to sustain it more than being, rather than the converse. But if you figure out a way, let us all know.
If you were, you wouldn't be available to other people.
Good point.
You can't be alive. You can have energy.
You think you can't be alive?
If you're alive, you eat and excrete and do all kinds of things.
You know? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Can you repeat that?
It's a little discussion.
Twice a day, that's it.
So you're going to read the fine print there?
So you're not going to repeat
it? It's really hard to read.
Sometimes not knowing is best.
You know, there was another description that was the host and the guest.
Yes.
And we chanted this morning, the Jewelmere Samadhi, and it says, if you can achieve continuity, that's called the host within the host. That's the fifth rank, right? Yeah. So can you say more about the guest and host? That's a very interesting context, rather than, I think when we look at absolute and relative, they become very abstract, and this is maybe more experiential, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So it's another system, parallel system, to the five ranks, and they were used freely. Dungshan used these freely, just like the I Ching was very well known by everybody, and even that mentioned in the Jewelmere Samadhi. We talk about the trigrams, and then there are three, and piled up they become five. And so that's also, I see you have the actual trigrams, hexagrams there. And so each of the hexagrams evokes certain characteristics that people were very familiar with, and so that also helped them understand what these ranks might mean in terms of a framework. Host and guest are, if you think of a guest, you know, you're kind of just coming to something, but if you're the host, you're at home, right? So if you're at home, you can relate that to similar to being to oneness. So if it's host within the host, the guest has now, you know, arrived within his home, and he's the host within the host. So wherever there is the word relative, that would be the guest, and the host would be the absolute. And so the interplay of those two are very, they parallel this system. Same with lord and vassal and
seeming in the real.
Other words that we can use to describe these, the particular and the universal. Whatever, some people feel more comfortable with certain words, and I encourage you to use those words rather than some that you might experience some resistance, like absolute. People say, oh, no, I can't have an absolute. So go with the words that work for you. There are corresponding drawings, which I don't think I brought those.
Those diagrams?
Yeah, of the host and the guest.
By the way, here's a drawing of Dungshan.
Huh?
This is the fellow who started all this trouble.
Indeed. Dungshan, yes.
They're strange. They're diagrammatic. They don't seem to work. I've never related to them very well.
No, I think they're weird, too. They're like a Vajra. The image of the Vajra for hosting guests, and so you have this going like this, and then it's dark on the top and then light on the bottom, and dark means wholeness or oneness, because there's clarity. I think that helps. Okay. All right, so thank you so much.
I get a feeling someone just got a little fancy with the concept and
Yeah, they just
drawing diagrams. Yeah,
just kept going, kept going. So the first trigram from the I Ching is, I thought it was sun. Of course, they don't tell me on this page, but the real comprising the seeming is with the real being black and then the white, because the reason it's white or clear is that you see discriminations. In black, there are no discriminations. That's how you can distinguish when you see these types of drawings. So then it's reversed in the second rank. So now you have the absolute and the relative, and the black part is here, and the other half of the circle is at the top, which is clear. And then there's the third one, which is it's a circle with a black dot in the center that's coming from within the real. So it seems like it should be reversed. And they call it resurgence of the real. Host coming to light. Oh, here's also prince looking at minister. So that's another system, prince. And then, of course, the fourth was it's totally clear. And in this one, the seeming uniting with the real. And, of course, the last one is all black, the integration or interpenetration of. So, yeah, Dungshan is, this particular teaching, when you study it in any length of time, you realize how much actually it shows up in our chants. And, of course, the Jhumir Samadhi is, one that Dungshan is put the five ranks in verse. He had, the first day that I spoke about the five ranks, Dungshan's initial five ranks are verses, five verses of four or five lines, I think. And so that was the first presentation, but then the Jhumir Samadhi, of course, is a different verse, but still expressing something very similar, if not it. So we're going to continue with Dungshan, and we'll learn a little bit more about him as we go through the koan, case 49, which here's one in here. Which makes this night master one. So, you read the whole thing. It's two pages. Three, two and a half. So one thing I should mention before we actually read this is that in the footnotes, the word for offering is the character has two meanings. One of them is offering, and the other is for reality. So when we look at koans, we should always come back to what is the intent of this koan, and so see if we can come back to that, more of stepping back and seeing what are they trying to teach us here. We can get lost in the details, and I think we also want to be cognizant of the big picture here. Because they are teachings, and if one would take on this particular koan or another one, you would want to know generally what is the purpose of the koan or the intent. So, who would like to start? Wow. Okay, Sharon.
Page 49, Dungshan presents offerings before the image. Introduction. It can't be depicted, can't be drawn. Puha just turned a flip yongyan. Puha just turned a flip yongyan, just showed half his body. Ultimately, who is in what space? Case. As Dongsha was presenting offerings before the image of Yunyan, he retold the story from before about depicting the reality. A monk came forward and said, when Yunyan said, just this is it, what did he mean? Dongshan said, at that time, I nearly misunderstood my late teacher's meaning. The monk said, did Yunyan himself know it or not? Dongshan said, if he didn't know it is, how could he be able to say this? If he did know it, how could he be willing to say it? When Dongshan took leave of Yunyan, Dongshan asked, after your death, if someone asks me if I can describe your reality, how shall I reply? After a while, Yunyan said, just this is it. Dongshan sank into thought. Yunyan said, you are in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing. Dongshan left without saying anything more. Later, as he was crossing a river, he saw his reflection, and then, for the first time, was thoroughly enlightened. Thereupon, he composed a verse. Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from self. I now go on alone, everywhere I need it. It now is me. I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with thusness. When Dongshan was in the community setting offering, when Dongshan was in the community setting offerings before the image of Yunyan, he retold
the foregoing and
story about describing the reality of Yunyan. Then a monk asked, when Yunyan said, just this is it, what did he mean? Dongshan said, at that time I nearly misunderstood what my teacher meant. If you go to the pause and just this is it to understand the point, this is just conveying the matter by a different name. That is why he knew the form upon seeing the reflection and became enlightened just as he crossed the river. The monk said, does Yunyan know it or not? If you say he absolutely knows it is, then he's an attendant. Haven't you heard it said that only one who knows it can uphold it? If you say he absolutely doesn't know it is, here there is gain and loss. There is completely not knowing it is, there is knowing it is, then after all not knowing. And there is not knowing it is, turning into knowing it is, turning into knowing it is. Dongshan said, if he didn't know it is, how could he be able to say so? If he did know it is, how could he be willing to say so? The Huayan school says, inner reality is complete. Words are partial. When words are born, inner reality is lost. This is mystery upon mystery, ever more wondrous. Integration and harmonious communion, the impartial, non-leaking bloodline. Dongshan first dwelt at Baji Temple on Mount Jinpen in the latter part of the Daozong era of the Tang Dynasty, 847 to 859. Later, he moved to Mount Dong at Dawan Yushan, where he was the first generation. As he was conducting a memorial service for Yunyan, a monk asked, "What instruction did you receive at your late teacher's place?" Dongshan said, "Although I was there, I didn't receive his instruction." The monk said, "Then why conduct the service for him?" Dongshan said, "Even so, how dare I turn my back on him?" The monk said, "You rose to prominence at Nankan's, then why do you instead conduct the service for Yunyan?" Dongshan said, "I do not esteem my late teacher's virtues or his Buddhist teaching. I only value the fact that he didn't explain everything for me." The monk said, "You succeeded in the late teacher, then you agree with him or not?" Dongshan said, "I half agree, half don't agree." The monk said, "Why don't you completely agree?" Dongshan said, "If I completely agreed, then I would be unfaithful to my late teacher. I say Yunyan was the Baishan for 20 years, yet succeeded to Yoshan. Dongshan rose to prominence at Nankan, yet succeeded to Yunyan. Different sprouts of the same kind became luxuriant, making the spiritual roots dense and firm. With Furong, the school was revived. With Chantong, its embellishment was finally complete. What is the full embellishment? The first step. What would you be able to say there? In the third watch, the cock crows. Dawn for the forest of homes. How could he be willing to say this? The thousand-year crane grows old with the pine in the clouds. The jewel mirror, clear and bright, shows absolute and relative. The jade machine revolves. See them both show up at once. The way of the school is greatly influential. Its regulated step is continuous and fine. Father and son change and pass through. Oceanic is their fame."
Thank you. So there's a footnote about Puha, who turned the flip. So when Banchan was going to die, he asked if his disciples, if anyone could depict his true likeness, and he just did a flip and left. He was, chosen as the ancestor, next ancestor. Do you flip?
All the time.
That's what I thought. So,
kind of handsful here.
So there are lots of things going on in this one. Did any of you hear phrases from the jewel mirror samadhi? Are you familiar enough with that one? This is Yunyan's understanding. And Dongshan was, of course, very appreciative of receiving that. There is a line in here that I just wanted to draw your attention to, because in the time of Dongshan, which was our 9th century ancestor, he says, Yunyan says to him as he's leaving the monastery, "You are in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing." Well, in the original text, this is, of course, a koan, but if you go to Dongshan's text compiled by Powell. What one gets a sense of is that it's people at that time believed that you had Buddha nature. It's a kind of almost in the sense of it being a possession, Buddha nature. You have it. Now you have it. Preserve it well, right? And Dogen, actually, you know, he's our 13th century ancestor, and he has a different perspective on that. You know, you are Buddha nature. So that was a big shift, and it's I just thought you might want to know where some of that when Dogen interpreted the material, he did so with a different sense of and different understanding. And so this brings us to this confirmation that, you know, here's another example of Buddhism being evolutionary. And so as new understandings are arise, that they're incorporated. So, I don't know.
But there were a lot of people that weren't too receptive of this idea that, yeah.
Oh, who, you mean Dogen?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, there were some that grasped, but some of them that, you know, really thought it was way off.
Well, no doubt with his having his fresh approach, yes. Resistance to change, yeah. So I just thought it was interesting that it's in this koan. So I mentioned earlier about the offerings being offerings to the ancestors. This is what typically at monasteries, just like there's an ancestor. Did you have your ancestor room here? And
Kaisando.
And so all monasteries have their ancestor hall. And people make offerings to them. And what's interesting about this koan is that now we also have an expanded understanding of offerings being also realities. So when you're, just think about if you're making an offering, that now, even if, you know, in lighting a candle or offering incense, you know, it's much, you know, to the ancestors, it's a much greater meaning and has, so, you know, you take that with, do you do ancestor? Maybe during Sagaki or the right around there?
We chant the lineage chant occasionally, not on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But our dedication includes some of our ancestors, not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an abbreviated grouping. Yeah.
But you don't have a special date. Well, you did Koban. There was
Do have Koban's memorial.
That's yes, right. That's right. Yeah. So that
and
would
then we chant. Definitely we chant all the lineage. Yeah.
So when you make offerings, now you understand that when you're making offerings, it's actually you're also acknowledging and reality, which is much more expanded.
Mm-hmm.
It's, definitely.
That's difficult for us in the West because we bury our dead and we put heavy stones on top of them so they stay there, basically, stay in the ground and forget about them. But in Asia, there's a tradition of really remembering their ancestors. Mm-hmm. Like Jiro could speak to this too, that what is it, Jiro, if when someone dies, there's a memorial for on the third day, the seventh day,
49th day.
The 49th day.
Mm-hmm.
And then successive years, like, so they do not forget. So,
No, but I mean, is it one person remembering their parents, or do I remember my parents and my grandparents and my great grandparents and my great 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 great?
I've wondered about that because when I was in temples in Japan, they were or in the home temple in Japan, they whole families would come, and I wasn't clear whether it was like a grandfather or a great grandfather. They were doing a memorial.
Because in Jewish tradition, for a parent at least, we say a memorial thing every year.
I think they have a fixed system of years. I don't know what it is, but it's 5, 7, 12, 17, like that, 25. So.
Yeah. No, but I would say it's for my parents, the rest of my life.
I want to inject one question. One of the paragraphs talks about the impartial, non-leaking bloodline. So could you comment on non-leaking?
It's a term we use in Zen.
I know the use of it, but I don't know what it means relative to the bloodline.
Well, maybe move beyond beyond leaking. You know, that's the only, when I read that, that was the only thing that I thought of. It's like, okay. because leaking means
you're leaving karma.
Right, and, you know,
This ignorant member of the lady is completely confused to the extent that is the offering for the benefit of the offerer, or is it the offeree? Who's achieving some kind of benefit from the offering. In other words, if there's no afterlife, then you'd think that it was completely for the offeror, right? I mean, you're assuming that there's some credit, some kind of currency with the offering, right? That is transmitted to the offerer that was paying. But if there's no afterlife, then it becomes moot. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's actually an interesting question, I think, because, the whole ancestor worship or acknowledgement is so developed in other cultures. Even in our hemisphere, it's more, I think, developed than it is here in North America.
In this, though, there might be intimations of the relative and the absolute. So from the relative position, we're actually making an offering to the absolute. In other words, like, there's birth and death, but there's also one life which has no origination and no extinction, and we make an offering to that. And so we make an offering to the absolute, but in a local sense at least, we're offering to our ancestors. We're saying, oh, I'm a bag of skin, I'm between one birth and one death, but I'm actually acknowledging that something bigger is going on, and it includes the past, and will probably include the future. You know, I think it'd be interesting to make an offering to the future, wouldn't it? Just like we make an offering to the past. It just occurred to me we don't do that. We could just as easily make an offering to the future.
So form and formless, I think, would be in one of the structures of this, if you think about what you just said about relative and absolute, relative being the world of form,
and then
formless being oneness, or, you know, the Dharmakaya, the absolute. Yes, John?
So is there implicit reincarnation theory?
I don't know if I'm going there.
No. Not in metempsychosis itself. Not in Buddhism. But there is in the worldview of India at the time of the Buddha. So it was talked about that way.
So when I see these references to karmic circumstances, I think some of the verses, where is that karmic? What is that karmic? Is that from this life? Karma from this life? I've accumulated good and bad karma only in this life.
We're kind of getting off topic, but yeah, you do. And it's all your fault.
That's a whole big subject. Yeah, probably a little out of scope.
It's related to the first and original teaching of the Buddha, which is pratityasamutpada, dependent co-arising. So it means that everything, every being is affected and involved with everything else. So what you, how you pick up your cup of tea, isn't there some Indian Native American where the something, the flight of an insect wing affects the
butterfly effect.
Yeah, there's some, we affect the smallest detail of our lives affects the whole world. So
chaos.
That's karma.
Systems analysis and chaos theory. Well, let's get back to this.
Have a cup of tea.
Okay, let's see where else we're going to go. So we had, and we talked about some of the images that were in this koan. So we've heard the story now of multiple times in this case of what happened between Dongshan and Yunyan. About what his teaching is, just this is it. I think it's a teaching that for me has resonated over the years because it's a very when chaos reigns, to say just this is really a very profound and powerful teaching to bring you back to the moment and remember your, you know, what position you're in, in a sense. Just this. The other piece, when the verse is brought in about Dongshan is saying, it is now me, I now am not it, also is from the Jewel Mirror. There's also in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, you are not it.
You are not it, it actually is you. Form and image behold each other. You are not it, it actually is you.
So form and image behold each other.
It's like facing, actually that's a title. It's like facing a jewel mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Form and image behold each other. You're not it, it actually is you.
That was his actually awakening experience. Seeing his reflection in the river as he crossed it.
There's another translation of it that I like, that it's kind of clear, a little bit clearer. It goes, if I seek outside myself, it recedes from me. As I walk alone, I meet him everywhere. When I am not I, or I am not him, there is nothing that is not myself. Understanding this way is merging with suchness.
When I am not him?
Or when I am not it, or that's the, you can tell that's problematic with the pronouns.
If
seeking outside myself, if I seek outside myself, it recedes from me. As I walk alone now, I meet it. Let's call it it. I meet it everywhere. When I am not it, then there is nothing that is not myself. Understanding this way is merging with suchness. I don't know if that clarifies it. How does it go in here?
It is not me.
It is.
It says just don't. And that one says
when mm-hmm. like it's a progression or something.
Mm-hmm.
When I am not being me,
mm-hmm.
then mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. when I stop being me, when I stop being on as me, then I make the whole world available to be me. And, but you could say then the me doesn't exist, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
No self.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where I think in Genjo, Koan Dogen kind of takes this approach where he talks about the myriad things realizing themselves. Mm-hmm. So that the me, the I, is completely dropped out of the picture.
Yeah, sure.
I think he completes this,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This teaching. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To study the Buddha ways, or to know the Buddha ways, to know the self. To know the self is to forget self. And to forget the self, when the self is forgotten, then all things confirm the self, or all things are the self, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the self drops off. Right? Yeah. The whole impetus for the junior samadhi, was it? I mean,
mm-hmm.
This happened first.
Yes.
This was his enlightenment thing. And then,
yes.
And then he wrote the junior samadhi. Yeah.
And then the system of ranks kind of...
Came later?
Well, some of that is actually in the koan, and I think the line about the... about the it's in the verse. It's in the third watch. The cock crows. That is the an excerpt for one of the lines from one of the verses from Dongshan's.
So the ranks, the five ranks came first, and then
yes.
The poem was the later.
Yes. Thing. Yes. No? Okay. That's okay. So I was just looking to see what in the complete koan. There's some additional commentary. Now, this is one song commenting now on the verse, which was which you have. I think Sharon read that was the last piece, the verse. So here is Wanchen saying, "Dongshan instructed Gaoshan. I was personally sealed with the jewel mirror samadhi by my late teacher Yunyan. Its content is extremely clear and to the point. Now I hand it on to you. Keep and uphold it well. The jewel mirror shows up absolute and relative. Is this not the cock crowing in the forest of houses? The crane growing old with the pine in the clouds? The test of absolute and relative. Although the mirror is clean, it has a back and a front. Only the jade works spinning its weaves them together, both light both dark, with the technique of simultaneous realization. The elaboration of the Book of Changes says, when the way comes to an end, then change. Having change, you pass through. Having long passed through, Dongshan's father and son guide their actions and regulate their steps. Even now, the school's style flourishes greatly, proof that when the source is deep, the flow is long.
And the simultaneous realization is what Michael was describing with Buddha's first teaching? Or? No, I guess not.
Well, I think that's the because I think that's in
codependent arrest.
Right. Well, it's also Dogen uses practices realization, so it's so there's. I don't know if the added sayings, which we haven't even gone there, but they're just sometimes they can clarify, other times confuse, as in koans. So in working with koans, when we talked about looking at the introduction, we were looking at how does it apply to yourself. That's the most important. Look at the first two lines. See if you can compare and contrast. Identify the images. And then we didn't talk at all about the question that's raised at the end. So anybody have any thoughts on that? The question at the end of this is, ultimately, who is in what state?
Ultimately, meaning in the end? Or ultimate meaning?
I think, yeah, ultimately, maybe, could mean also. Another word for the absolute, ultimately. Who is in what state? Or maybe at the end of this, where are we? Is what we're asking. And, you know, where's Dongshan? Where's Yunyan? Where's the other players in here? Where are they?
The monk.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. So maybe the nature of the content of the koan is such that it's not maybe easy to apply, just because of the material is. We don't really have that same kind of culture of what's going on here. My thinking in bringing this particular koan to this group was really to share the fact that how some of our ancestors, when they have teachings, how they show up in so many places. Dogen quotes, and he will develop it more. We have the koans, we have the chants of the Song of the Jewel Mirror, Samadhi. It might be in other places too, and where you would start to see some of the phrases, some of the imagery. So, I think the fact that Dongshan has actually not there more stories about Dongshan in the Book of Serenity, maybe two or three more other than the ones we covered here, So he was quite influential in having this teaching be put forth. And if you understand and you know can use the framework of the five ranks when you're reading not only koans but also other material like Dogen, you will start to appreciate the complexity of and yet versatility of Dogen in his use of language and his ability to also move you from a one position to another, all within, you know, a sentence. He's, you know, you do somersaults with Dogen, more than flipping. Mm-hmm. So be prepared. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I shouldn't ask this because of distraction, but Wong Sha just showed half his body right after Kuha did a flip. What's
that?
In the introduction.
In the introduction. So you're wondering what Long Ya showed just half his body. So I think Long Ya is a student of Dongshan. And does anybody know the Ehe Koso Hatsugamen? Yeah? Accordingly, Long Ya said, what in past lives was not yet complete, now must be complete, and this life saved the body coming from accumulated lives.
Yeah.
Before enlightenment, yeah. Okay.
We chant that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. So, we know Long Ya, but you're asking specifically, just showed half his body. What side?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody flips and someone shows us. This is also, there's this whole thing, there's another structure in koans. I'm only, you know, giving you bits and pieces, so I, you know, it's not that I have any, you know, corner on this knowledge, because I don't. Actually, my teacher is very generous with creating some worksheets for me, and she identified these structures based on meetings with Katagiri Roshi. And one of them is blocking of the small self. And so, you know, that's a different construct that sometimes you might see where somebody will turn away very abruptly and you wonder, well, why is he doing there now? So that's just another one of those structures. Going beyond the conventional, that, you know, the idea of, well, we know flipping isn't unconventional. It's in the bigger picture, but it's it's probably another structure too.
Mm-hmm.
What's meant by a flipping? Is that some kind of reversal of idea, or what is flipping?
Well, he could have done a flip.
Tradition.
Some of that was going on this time. There was you know, Zen antics, and they did do you know, the Linji school, I think, is the one that was known for shouts and knocking you up alongside the head with a hoe or slapping. Dongshan, on the other hand, was a different lineage. He's Soto versus Rinzai. And he would never, I mean, they actually specify that he does not, you know, do any of these kind of physical things to induce awakening. Because that's what it was really for. I don't know. I don't know much about that. as you know, in terms of like experiencing that's not really part of the Soto school. But so a flip is maybe more gentle in the sense of it's within him, it's himself doing it. Mm-hmm. And to show you maybe how he turned around and took the backward step, right? I don't know. Yeah, we have a footnote on, what's the footnote on Puha? He's one of the, it's a similar story about asking about what would he say. That was a really important question a student could ask their teacher. How will I, after you're gone, how will I tell other people about, you know, your teaching? What is it that you want me to, you know, to convey? And that's why Union said, just this is it. That was his teaching. If you ask Bankei, right, Bankei is all about the unborn. And that's all he talks about. Everything is about, and he's another Zen master. I think he's Japanese, Bankei. But so it's really important that it's kind of, and so like with Dongshan, we know it's the five ranks, and Hakun, we know it's the four cognitions and one hand clapping. Go on, right? Yes, John.
So would you recommend sitting with some of these koans to deepen the practice?
Well, if you wanted to take a koan to study for yourself, you may. Sometimes if you're doing some study, whether it's koan study or even sutra study, and you just are really trying to come to terms and grip, you know, what is being said, then I actually find it very helpful to explore it during my meditation practice. So, I just got to work with it. Use it in that sense of, you know, well, what does that mean? And sometimes even the chants, I would also do that as a kind of a practice. I would chant on a number of the ones that have already been translated in English. And then if there was a phrase or so I wasn't clear about, then I would just bring it up during meditation and just ask the questions about it. Well, what do you know conventionally? And if, you know, or you could say, you could start with, what do you know from oneness? You could start at either point to penetrate it.
Would you know how you resolve the koan?
Would you know? I think that's an individual thing, you know, because you can work with a teacher. Ta-da. Da-da-da-da. No. you know, he may assign some koans to you.
Just this is it.
But it's something that if you take an interest in koans, then to explore them, because some of it is through your own, you know, true self, that you can, you know, allow prajna to come up and work with prajna to help clarify. It's very helpful. So sitting with koans is really what is more in the Rinzai tradition. They sit with koans, and then they have their understanding tested by their teacher.
Yeah, I find that very interesting to read different people's commentary on it. That is very interesting. You know,
you get a sense of how diverse the responses can be, and I think in our tradition, I think having these teachings can be another, as I said earlier, another way to penetrate into these recesses of the mind that, you know, don't really respond to linear thinking. And so this is another one of those very much like our own practice, which is non-linear. So it just continues in a different way.
Should we read it?